Now, according to Nouwen, becoming the beloved means letting the truth of our belovedness flow into everything we think, say, or do. It's about moving the truth of our belovedness from our head to our heart so that our belovedness is not just an idea or a theory or a theological truth, but that it's an everyday reality. He has this to say, when our deepest truth is that we are the beloved, and when our greatest joy and peace come from fully claiming that truth, it follows that this has to become visible and tangible in the ways we eat and drink, talk and love, play and work. And isn't this what we're truly after? At the core of everything, beneath the surface of all our New Year's resolutions that we're all going to give up on at the end of the month, at the root of all the goals and our aspirations for life, isn't this what we're after? A truly embodied faith that isn't just theological theory, but something that makes its way into the minute details of our everyday lives, in the way we think, in the way we speak to one another, in the way we treat one another, in the way that we love. And so in his book, Nouwen articulates this process of becoming the beloved, taking this idea that we're beloved from our head into our heart, into the everyday reality of our lives. And he breaks it down into these four movements: taken, blessed, broken, and given. And these four movements, they're actually meant to mirror the practice of coming together around a table, right? When we gather together at Mr. Mahjong after service today and we get a loaf of bread, right? We take the bread, we bless that bread, we break it, and then we give it, right? It also mimics Jesus at the Last Supper around communion. And these words summarize our lives as believers, as followers of Jesus. We're called to become bread for the world, taken, blessed, broken, and given. And so throughout this collection, over the next few weeks, we're going to be exploring each of these movements and discovering how to become the beloved in our everyday lives. And so today, we're starting with taken. No, not Liam Neeson. We're talking about taken as the bread. And so I'm going to start with this. I'm a big Grey's Anatomy fan. In 2005, what was perhaps the most iconic line from TV show Grey's Anatomy was uttered. I don't know if you remember it. In episode 5 of season 2, Meredith Grey pleads with her love interest, Derek Shepherd, to pick me, choose me, love me over his then wife, Addison Montgomery, whom I'm actually a bigger fan of, but nonetheless. And at the time, people were gushing over this scene. They're like, this is so romantic. This is hot. This is what I need in my life. But little did I know that 20 years later, this iconic line would become a meme that people laugh at. I recently heard the term pick me girl. And like many things I hear on TikTok, had absolutely no idea what that meant. So naturally, I Googled it. And I discovered that a pick me person is someone who will pretty much do whatever it takes to be picked, usually romantically, by someone else. Now, when I was reading this definition, I couldn't help but feel a little offended, because I think, honestly, that for most of my life, I had been the textbook definition of a pick-me boy, right? Thirsting for attention, for love and affection, longing to be seen, known, and chosen by others, often hiding parts of myself that I thought people wouldn't like to be accepted, and putting on masks to become someone I wasn't to be loved. And we might have called it being thirsty back in the day, but nowadays we call it pick me. But I also think that there's something to this meme that actually speaks to a core part of our humanity. That deep down inside, there's a part of us that longs to be picked, to be chosen, and in essence, seen, known, and loved, whether it's by our parents or by a significant other or by our friends and loved ones, something inside of us wants to know that we have been picked, that we have been seen, known, and loved. To become the beloved, we first have to know that we are taken. Or I think a better word that helps illustrate this is chosen. Our world is full of people who question whether it would have been better had they not been born, people who wonder if anyone wants them, people who wonder if anyone sees them, people who question if anyone loves them. If we go to 1 Peter 2:9, Paul writes, "But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light." What's he saying? You and I have been chosen. And you know, I think the beauty of the gospel isn't just that we were chosen, isn't just that we were included, it's that we were chosen. It's that every single one of us weren't just included or grafted in by default, but we were chosen. How many of you know that being chosen is different from being included? You know, when I was little, it's interesting because I feel like I very much had the very same body type when I was younger, just a little bit smaller. So I'll basically saying I was a little rotund, okay? But what people was often surprised about me, despite my circular shape, is that I was very agile. Okay, I was very agile for my size, for my age. But the problem was whenever we played dodgeball and people were picking teams, they took one look at me. They're like, nope. And they skipped over me. And I remember so many times being in line for dodgeball. You guys have been in that classic situation where there's two team captains and they're all choosing someone. And I remember for many recesses, I remember being chosen last. And you know what that feeling's like? It's like I don't even feel chosen. I'm just included by default. It's like I wasn't even wanted. I'm just grafted in. And I think for most of us, we kind of view ourselves that way in light of God, that we are kind of just grafted in, but then there are those that are like super holy, that have it all together, that are the perfect parents, that have such deep revelation and insight, that are chosen. And for me, I'm just kind of grafted in or included by default. But I remember as we started to play dodgeball throughout that season, people saw how agile I was. They saw how good I was at dodgeball. Honestly, if I was to compete professionally in dodgeball, I think I'd be really, really good. I was that good. And all of a sudden, I found myself in the line, not being left last, but often being chosen first or second. And I remember the contrasting feelings of either being last and included in versus being chosen because someone saw my gifts and my uniqueness. What I love about the gospel, what I love about God, is that it would be one thing if we were just included in by default, out of obligation, because God had to. But it's an entirely different thing knowing that we were chosen, hand-selected, hand-picked. You and I weren't just lumped into the kingdom by default. And even further, we aren't chosen because of our achievements or successes or gifts or popularity. We were chosen before we did a single significant thing. In fact, scripture tells us that we are chosen before we even came into existence. You guys know the famous passages, Jeremiah 1:5. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Ephesians 1:3-4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us in Christ with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places, even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and blameless before him. If you think about it, this is revolutionary. This is countercultural. Who chooses someone even before they know them? Who chooses someone before they have anything to contribute? Who chooses someone before they have anything of significance? What the gospel tells us is that from all eternity, long before you were born into this world, you existed in God's heart. Long before anyone saw you, you were seen by the eyes of God. Long before anyone heard you laugh or cry, you were heard by God's attentive ears. Long before anyone spoke to you, you were spoken to by the voice of divine love. And long before our parents, our friends, our peers, or anyone in our world picked us, we were already chosen. That is a profound truth. You and I are God's chosen one. And our great spiritual battle actually begins with the reclaiming of our chosenness. Here's the beautiful thing. God chose us as we are, not for who we would become. This means that those parts of yourselves that you think are unlovable, that aren't conducive with religious environments or in the church, those things that you think if people saw or got a whiff of, they would run, those parts of us were also with us when we were chosen. God saw all of that, yet despite those things, chose us. When we know that we're chosen, I think the beauty is knowing that we don't have to chase acceptance or significance or worthiness from others. We don't need to hide parts of ourselves that need to be accepted. We don't need to put on masks to be loved. We are free to be ourselves. I think one of the greatest breakthroughs, I'm always so moved when I see in the church those moments where people realize those very things that they felt like they needed to hide, as soon as they brought it out, they were loved even more. You know, we went through a process of becoming an affirming church last season, and I think I hear so many stories of people who had to hide their sexuality in the church. And for so long, they believed this is that thing that will keep me from truly being beloved. This is that thing that will keep me from being chosen, not just by God, but by community. But one of the greatest gifts that I've experienced as a pastor in just a few years of being a pastor is seeing people be fully themselves and realize that all of me is actually lovable, that people can accept all of these parts of me. And I think that's the beauty of the gospel. And this is what Henry Nouwen is saying. Those parts of us that we feel like we need to conceal, those parts of us that we feel like we need to put a mask over, were actually already in mind as we were chosen. That means that we are chosen not for who we'll become, not the perfect you that you'll become, but for who you are right now. And understanding that changes everything. And so Henry Nouwen, he shares these three ways that we can claim our chosenness in this journey of becoming the beloved. And the first is this. First, we have to continuously unmask the lies of the world. What do I mean? Is that we have to be so reminded about what the world is. Manipulative, controlling, power hungry, and destructive. There are systems and structures in our culture that masquerade itself as life-giving, as empowering, that are actually all about control and amassing power. The world tells us countless lies about who we are. Do you know, basically I watched this really fascinating YouTube video about Instagram ads. They say Instagram ads work so well because it convinces you of a deficit in your life, right? I am not pretty enough. I don't have enough clothes. I don't have enough wealth. I don't have enough followers, right? It's all about convincing you to buy a lie that you are not enough, that you are not chosen. And part of what we have to do is unmask the reality of the lies in our world around us and remind ourselves of what the truth is every single day. And so every time we feel hurt, offended, or rejected, we have to remind ourselves these feelings, as strong as they may be, are not telling me the truth about myself. That ad that I'm watching that makes me feel a certain way is not telling me the truth about myself. Those movies, those stories that I hear that make me feel less than, those people that I compare myself to on social media are not telling me the truth about myself. The truth, even though I can't feel it right now, is that I am a chosen child of God, precious in his eyes, called beloved from all of eternity and held safe in his everlasting embrace. That is the truth. But what this requires then, it means asking ourselves really tough questions. Why did I completely unravel when I received that criticism? Come on, how many of you are like me where that one word of criticism, even if there are like hundreds of words of praise, unravels me to my core? Why did I fall into feelings of worthlessness when I dropped the ball on that project at work, even though for most of the other time I've been killing it? Why do I always feel too ugly, too fat, too dumb when I scroll through social media? Why do I always compare myself to others, right? We have to ask ourselves the tough questions to get to the root. Because I think most of us would find that the root of all of those questions is a lie that we've believed, that I am actually not chosen, and I'm actually not beloved. It's funny because I think it's been, it's disgusting, 8 years now where I was in this room for a night service back at our previous church, and I was preaching a sermon about this very topic, about the love of the Father. And I remember one of my friends who's like, really gifted worship leader and pastor, he was like, I'm going to attend your church that night. And so I don't know why, but I felt this like external pressure, like I got to be on and I got to bring it. But I remember that night, like out of every sermon I've ever preached, I think that night I bombed the most. Like it was the worst sermon I have ever preached in my entire life. it got to a point where like I was talking. And have you ever like been in those situations where you're talking? You're like, and you're talking, but in your head, you're like, what am I talking about? And why am I continuing to go on? It was like one of those moments where I was just in this endless loop of talking, but not really saying anything. And I remember after service, we broke down. It was actually in this room. We broke down. I went home with Krista. We were only a few blocks away. And I just cried, like in her arms. And the next morning, you know, I think it's understandable. You could be sad when you mess up or when you fail. But I had to really ask myself, why did this affect me so deeply when I messed up? Why did it affect me so deeply when I bombed a sermon? And I came to the conclusion that I believed that my worth was attached to what I can produce or how revelatory or how powerful or how pastoral I can seem. And I learned that my worth and my belovedness was attached to my success or failure of this thing. And I think for so many of us, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's in our relationships, whether it's just in our own personal lives, mindsets, or well-being, we, at the core of our anxiety, at the core of our insecurity, is this lie that we've believed, that we are not beloved, that we are not chosen. And so first, we have to unmask the lies of the world. But second, we have to keep looking for people and places where you're reminded of your deepest identity as one who is chosen and beloved. You know, if there's any area of my life that I feel overwhelmingly thankful for at the end of every year, it's the community that surrounds me and holds me and loves me. People that remind me of my belovedness and my chosenness again and again. Last year was actually the first time in many years that our leadership team got together and celebrated us on Pastors Appreciation Month. I don't know if you know, but October is Pastors Appreciation Month. And for the many years, over a decade of pastoring, this was the first Pastors Appreciation Month where someone put together something for Krista and I. And I cannot express how powerful that was for us. The thoughtful texts and letters and gifts impacted us. Reminder after reminder of our belovedness and our chosenness. And I love that most of the words that were spoken to us were not about our gifts, but about our personhood, right? It wasn't that, Pastor Mickey, you're so good at preaching or leading worship. It was about the essence of who God created us to be, who we are. And that does something to you. And it made me think, what if 99 could be a place where people can be reminded again and again of their chosenness, of their belovedness, that they were not a mistake, that they are precious and beloved, that they are significantly seen, known, and loved. Listen, I am who I am today, not because I found my way on my own, but because I've been planted in communities where people have spoken my chosenness and belovedness into me again and again. And I think the beautiful thing about this is that when love chooses us, it chooses us without making anyone else feel excluded, right? In the world, it's different. When someone is chosen, someone's excluded. When I'm in line to be chosen for dodgeball and I'm not chosen until the last choice, right? There's always someone who's chosen, someone who's excluded. But to be chosen as the beloved of God is actually something radically different. Instead of excluding others, it actually includes others. Instead of rejecting others as less valuable, it accepts others in their own uniqueness. We used to have a catchphrase in my college ministry all the time. Every single one of us would say, I'm God's favorite. And it wouldn't be contradictory. Like literally, I'd be like, I'm God's, hey Steph, do you know I'm God's favorite? And she'd be like, yeah, that's cool. I'm God's favorite too. And we're all just like God's favorite. And I think there's an essence of truth there. That we are all God's favorite, that he loves us just as much uniquely in different ways. When we claim and constantly reclaim the truth of being the chosen ones, we soon discover within ourselves this deep desire to reveal to others their chosenness, right? Instead of making us feel that we're better, more precious or valuable than others, our awareness of being chosen actually opens our eyes to the chosenness of others. Have you experienced that? Like when you're so secure in who you are, you're not needing to clamor for other people's affection or attention to boost up your own self-ego or to boost up your own self-perception. But when you feel full and you have a good grasp of who you are, automatically, you now have the space and the capacity to see the chosenness and belovedness of others. And this is the great joy of being chosen. The discovery that I'm not chosen alone, but others are chosen as well. Now, I've come to discover in my life that to be in touch with my own goodness, to be in touch with my own love, to be in touch with my own self, to discover the unique goodness of myself allows me to discover the unique goodness of others. And as long as my self-doubts and fears guide me or fill me, I can't create space to see the beauty of others. But once I claim my own chosenness, once I know without a shadow of a doubt that I am beloved, it opens me up to call out the chosenness and belovedness of others. This is what's at stake. This is why it's so important that we place ourselves around people and in places where our belovedness and our chosenness are affirmed again and again. Because when we know we are chosen, when we know we are beloved, we can do the same for others. What is deep friendship other than a calling forth of each other's chosenness, affirming one another as precious and beloved? Third, Nouwen advises us to celebrate our chosenness constantly. To say thank you to God for having chosen me. To say thank you to others who have reminded us of our chosenness. Gratitude is the best way to remind ourselves that we are not an accident, but we are a divine choice. When someone's kind to us, when an event turns out well, when a problem is solved, when a relationship is restored, when a wound is healed, practice gratitude, whether it's with words or flowers or a letter or a card or a phone call or a gesture of affection. When we practice gratitude, we come into our belovedness and chosenness all the more. Now one says, when we keep claiming the light, we will find ourselves becoming more and more radiant. I love that. When we keep claiming the light, when we're thankful and we realize that there's so much to be thankful for in my life, when we keep claiming that light, we find ourselves becoming more and more radiant. And every time we decide to be grateful, it gets easier to see new things to be grateful for. Gratitude begets gratitude just as love begets love. And so you and I are chosen, church. And when we step into that chosenness, we can begin to call out the uniqueness and the chosenness of the world around us. I want us to close our eyes as we get ready to respond. Maybe you were a lot more secure growing up than I was, and you were not a pick-me boy or a pick-me girl or a pick-me person. But I do think that at the core of every single one of us is this longing or desire to be chosen. And I think the beauty of the gospel is that it frees us from not having to chase the affections or the chosenness of the people around us anymore. Rather, it affirms that we are already chosen. We are already beloved. And so I don't need to chase those things externally anymore. I don't need to chase it in my career. I don't need to chase it on social media. I don't need to chase it with my peers. I don't need to chase it in my successes. I don't need to chase it in lust. I'm already chosen and beloved. And from that deep place now, I can show the world that they're beloved as well. God, today I pray that you would speak to that core part of who we are and remind ourselves that we are chosen. Not just the parts of us that seem lovable, not just the parts that are outwardly accepted, but the parts of us, even the parts of us we're ashamed of. Even the parts of us we're scared to bring into the light and fear that someone will look at us and reject us. Even the parts of us that we've been told in the church is not good or not to be held. God, we thank you. You accept all of who we are and you have chosen us. Right now, just take a moment. Let's make space for the voice of the Father. Let's make space for the voice of the divine. What is he speaking to you right now in this moment to remind you that you have been chosen? Would you speak to us right now, God? Would you affirm our chosenness, our belovedness, and our identity in you?